GoDaddy.com. Use the code BLU139 to get 10% off any combination of purchases at GoDaddy.com. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1121, July 25, 2009.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
We'll be right back.
from the PodSafe Music Network. It's kind of got a weird name. It's Savium. The name of it's Stealth Geek. It's sort of, I like the music. It's sort of reminiscent of the Canadian rock group Rush. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Wytheville, I'm not sure exactly how they pronounce it, Virginia. I spent the night last night at Rockmart, Georgia, and this morning, I guess about 6:30, went in that office in there, and they it ended up turning out that they just let me drop the trailer, drop and hook, which I did, and then was able to sleep right there on their property. So in the meantime, before I even went to, I guess it was before I even went to bed this morning, they sent a load offer, and I had my choice between a load that picked up in Dallas, Georgia, which is a suburb of Atlanta. It's one of the suburbs of Atlanta. And it was going, I think it was going to, I can't remember. I think it was maybe New Jersey or someplace. And it was supposed to deliver on Tuesday. And then the other load picked up right there at Rockmart, right where I was at. And it delivers Monday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Now, this is a shorter load, but the reason I took it, number one, I didn't have to drive anywhere to go pick the load up. I could just pick it up right there where I was at. And number two, the other load, even though it had more miles on it, it was delivering on Tuesday, whereas this one has, I think it was like altogether 690 miles or something like that, roughly. But it delivers on Monday, so it would be possible that they'll get me another load on sometime on Monday after I unload in Pittsburgh, and then probably it'll be I'm assuming it's going to be maybe an overnight type load, so I'll potentially end up getting the same miles anyway. And so in any case, that's the one I took, and so woke up this afternoon and went in there, and they already had the thing loaded, and so I was able to get out of there. I guess it was about probably 4 p.m. I think when I left there, and started heading north, and so I've made it up here to Wytheville. Well, I need to find out how that's pronounced. Virginia, got here about 1 a.m. My time, Central Time, or 2 a.m. Eastern Time, and I've been kind of sitting here playing on the internet, kind of going through my email, and kind of looking at news stories and what have you, and decided to go ahead and I'd looked at enough stuff, and I decided to go ahead and to see if I could record a podcast. Virginia, for a long time, Virginia has had, I don't know why, but it's taken, the EVDO has really appeared in a lot of other states. It's just, it's with Sprint, certainly, the EVDO has just really, they've really rolled it out in a lot of states, except Virginia for some reason. Virginia, EVDO is appearing, but it's kind of lagged behind for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe it's the topography of the state. There's certainly enough traffic along Interstate 81 for them to to warrant all of the cell companies rolling the service out, because 81 is a very, very busy road, but there's still a lot of 1X connections. Now, here at Wytheville, Virginia, or Wytheville, Sprint does have EVDO service, but it's kind of quirky. Now, on the phone, it's showing right up, and the phone, the data connection on the phone is a fast Rev-A EVDO connection, but the for the air card, I actually have, if I stick it up in the window like I have it right now, I have it kind of stuck up on the dash in the passenger side window. I've got a, like a 6-foot USB extension cable connected, you know, to it, running from it to the computer. I get EVDO, but otherwise, I'm not. It's kind of weird. And I'm actually, that's with the Alltel. I tried it both ways. And at first, you know, the Alltel, you know, if it was in normal position, normally I don't try to put it up, I don't have to put it up on the dash. Normally I'm getting EVDO everywhere with Alltel. But tonight, you know, it's making me kind of stick it up on the dash, then I get EVDO. If I don't, it's real spotty. It's a 1X. I tried the Sprint card, and it's just giving me straight 1X regardless of what I do here, even though my Sprint phone, I've got an EVDO data connection. So, Virginia, you know, I guess they're still working on it. Virginia's still got a long ways to go before it has the same sort of data connections available from the cell companies that are pretty much readily available these days in other states. And again, I don't know why, but Virginia and Pennsylvania have lagged behind. I'm seeing more EVDO show up in Pennsylvania, but there are still plenty of places where it's just 1X, and especially with the Sprint. But so it's just kind of a strange, strange situation, because again, maybe it's the topography of those states, there, you know, of Virginia and Pennsylvania that are that have kind of caused them to lag behind somewhat. I really don't know. It's kind of strange, but you know, now with my phone, it's kind of weird. If I have an EVDO data connection on the phone, normally, of course, I'm using that as my podcast aggregator, and that uses the data connection on the phone. And normally, if it's EVDO, it downloads the stuff. Now, I don't do it. Generally, I won't do that while I'm driving, because it's much more likely it'll result in some broken downloads, some truncated files or shortened files. But now, if I use a 1X, if I try to do that, if I download with a 1X connection, if the phone gets too hot, which it will, the phone gets warmer with a 1X connection, a 1X data connection, if I'm really transferring data, it actually generates more heat than the EVDO does, which, you know, I don't know why. There's probably a reason for that. But if I'm downloading podcasts, if I've got a bunch of podcasts to download on a 1X connection, if I set the phone on its edge so that the heat can dissipate, then it'll usually go ahead and work, as long as it's not too hot. And it's not in a hot environment. But if I lay the phone down, or if the phone's in a hot environment, in a 1X, if I'm trying to download podcasts, especially with a 1X connection, and the phone's laying on its back, even, you know, just that, even if it's not really hot, but even if it's just laying on its back, that traps enough heat that'll cause the phone to lock up, which is, it's kind of weird. But normally, as I say, if I've got an EVDO connection, it just doesn't get quite as hot, although it does get warm. But I think probably the reason that it's generating extra heat, maybe in part with the 1X data connection, is because it takes longer than it does, you know, it takes longer to download than it does with a faster data connection. So that may have something to do with it, but it's just kind of a strange situation with a phone. And but they're, you know, with those chipsets that they have, they pack a lot, they're packing a lot into a very small space. And I don't think that they really, sometimes they don't probably really take into account what people are going to actually maybe do with those devices. Of course, you know, I get a device like that, chances are I'm going to push it to its limits. Certainly do that with computers a lot of times, and I've certainly done that with phones. I will kind of, you know, with this HTC Touch that I have through Sprint, I certainly push that thing. It's in use 24/7, and they did replace it a couple of months ago because it developed a problem. The first one that I had did develop the problem, you know, where it was on a bumpy road, it might cut out, drop a call, or it was just acting strangely. And I do pay for the extra insurance through Sprint. And they sent the replacement, and so far the replacement's working well, and I'm being very careful about not just laying it on the dash. I'll lay it on something that kind of cushions it a little bit, because I would rather not, I'd rather that it continue to function until such point as I'm ready to replace it. And so far, I'm happy with it. It's doing what I want it to do. It's not perfect, but it's fairly close. It's performing the function, and quite frankly, I haven't. There's not a new model that really entices me. I mean, that's typically the, I think the thing that drives people to get new cell phones, maybe, is either they've dropped one in the toilet, or they've dropped one, or it's gotten wet somehow otherwise, or they just need to replace it, and so they'll, you know, or maybe some new model comes out. But I think that at least for me, the phones have gotten sophisticated enough at this point that I really don't care about that. This phone that I have, this HTC Touch, is plenty sophisticated enough. Now, obviously, at some point, it's going to have to replace it. and I don't know, how long. I'd have to read the contract and find out how long this insurance is good for, because, quite frankly, I would hang on to it at this point unless they come out with something dramatically better. I would continue to probably hang on to this thing another year or two or three, who knows. As long as it continues to do what I want it to, I really don't care. But, I don't know if phones are really nearing, the point that computers have. What has happened with computers? Computers have gotten fast enough where they really don't need to be replaced unless they actually wear out. Now, I did, I don't know, several months back, I did buy a new desktop machine. What was it? I think it's the one that I got. It's either HP or Compaq. Now, I can't even remember. But it's a desktop machine, and it's running Windows Vista. You know, I didn't ever think I'd buy another machine that was running Windows, but it turned out I did. And that machine is, you know, it's a desktop machine, and it stays at home all the time, and, you know, I usually end up using it when I'm at home. I've got some tasks that I do with it, you know, especially, you know, it's hooked to a flatbed scanner and the slide negative scanner and so on and so forth, and that's primarily what I'm using it for. It's connected to the printer and all that, and it just sits there and stays connected, and then, you know, when I'm home, I turn it on and use it. And that's really the only time that it's actually in use. The reason I got it is because the old machine that I built almost probably 9 or 10 years ago really was starting to, it was working, excuse me, it was working fine for quite a few years, but what really prompted me to replace it was when I bought that negative slide scanner, you know, for $50 at Walmart to start scanning all of my old 35, you know, I got thousands of old 35 millimeter negatives, and I wanted to digitize them, and so I bought that thing from Walmart, and the computer was just very slow. It was a 1.2 gigahertz Athlon, and like I say, the thing was about 9 years old or almost 10 years old. I built it myself, and it was having, you know, it was just really kind of sluggish with that, you know, doing, performing that task. And of course, I, you know, replaced it with a dual core AMD, and I don't even know what chip it is, but it's much, much faster, obviously. And you know, that's kind of, you know, the way you have to look at computers and probably even your cell phones at this point is, it, you know, is the piece of equipment doing what you want it to do? And if it is, then it's not obsolete. It doesn't matter how many new models they come out with. As long as it does what you want it to do, then it's not obsolete. But now with the computers, for the past probably couple of years, computers have certainly, even laptops, they're fast enough where they don't need to be replaced unless, you know, unless they wear out, you know. And the days, I think, of them, unless they can come up with some radical new speeds or something, they can dream up new features, they're kind of at it just, you know, things are kind of now at just kind of a replacement speed. So, you know, now maybe Apple can entice people to maybe, you know, to switch, but even that, they're only going to get so far with that. So, you know, and then people were buying, you know, they've been buying the netbooks, you know, because those, you know, I did buy one of those too, and they serve their own little purpose. But, you know, I think I'm pretty well set with computers for some time to come, and like I say, my cell phone, I'm kind of happy with the model that I have, and I'll, you know, I have no plans on replacing it anytime soon. You know, I'm just kind of happy with what it does. It's performing the job, and I have the insurance on it, and if it craps out, then I'll just call Sprint up and say, hey, I want a new one. You know, send me some, you know, send me a replacement. But so I don't know, you know, the technology that we have now, it's still, you know, the technology is always improving, but what we have now seems to be pretty good, at least for what we're using it for today. And I think the developments really, perhaps at some point, if, you know, depending on the software, because if software, sometimes the hardware has gotten ahead of the software at times, and then, but there are certain software things that, you know, if you're trying to do, that'll really, can really end up putting a huge demand on hardware. But it just depends. I guess it really comes down to the device, you know, what you're using the device for. Now, you're obviously like a netbook. You're not going to be using a netbook to try to capture video or do video rendering or anything major. It, you know, a little netbook, basically, you're just going to carry it with you maybe. And, you know, it's just a little handy machine to do some light computing with, or email, or browsing, or that type, consume some media or something light. You're not going to be doing something majorly intense heavy on it. And then chances are on a, you know, like on a desktop system, or a heavy duty or a heavier duty laptop system, you're probably going to, you know, if you're going to do any kind of rendering or anything like that, then obviously you want something beefier. And with cell phones, now I'm as I say, I tend to use, you know, I've kind of am using the phone that I have. I'm really kind of pushing it, probably harder than the average user would. The average user is probably just going to do some browsing and make phone calls and take pictures and, you know, and maybe take a few videos and so on and so forth. Whereas I'm doing all of that plus using it to as a podcast aggregator and as a playback device for both the audio podcasts and as well as the video podcasts that I'm subscribed to. And so the phone is actually pretty much in use 24/7. Like right now, I've, you know, it may be done by now, but I've got it downloading a bunch of podcasts since I'm on an EVDO connection. Normally, once I park, I start that podcast aggregator, tell it to go out and look to see if there's any new podcasts, which there always are. And since I had to redo the storage card in that, I had to reformat the storage card, that basically, you know, I ended up having to reinstall the podcast aggregator software. The program I'm using, it's called, Smart RSS, and it's for Windows Mobile 6.1. Had to reinstall it, and so I ended up having to download a bunch of podcasts, you know, because the other thing got all messed up, and that storage card, you know, stuff was downloading, but then it was just going into a black hole, and you couldn't find it on the card. So I'm using that right now. It's probably, it may be done by now, or it's probably still downloading. But you know, and that may go on for several hours until it's, you know, it's till it's retrieved all those files. But and then while I'm driving, I'm either, you know, there's times when I'm either talking on the phone, or chances are, if I'm driving and I'm not talking on the phone, I've got it plugged in to the FM transmitter, and it's playing back podcasts. And, you know, like today, I spent pretty much the whole time I was driving, I was listening to a number of different podcasts. Same way, you know, same thing yesterday. And so, as I say, the phone is really, I used the heck out of it, and it really does. It stands up, you know. It stands up to the use, as far as performance wise. It's performing well enough for me, and doing everything that I want it to do, to the point where there really is, I'm really not tempted to, you know, find some better model or some sort of a snazzier model that's supposedly, you know, going to be sexier or do something better than this does. Because, you know, certainly there are models of phones that have, you know, they've got different things, and they've had, you know, like there's a new, friend was telling me about a new BlackBerry. I forget the model that he called. I don't know. It just came out with Sprint, and so he got one, and he was kind of disappointed with it because it has both CDMA and GSM capability, which he wanted, but he's not really happy with the call quality. It you know, and the Bluetooth quality, he said that it seemed to be lacking, and he also said that it just didn't seem to work as good as his old BlackBerry did, as far as actually, you know, the phone call aspect of it, being able to make and receive and calls without dropping them. His older BlackBerry seemed to have a better radio capability than this newer one that he got. And so he was sort of disappointed with it. You know, but then again, you can have, even among, you know, like in a BlackBerry situation, you can, you know, there is going to be differences even with this, within a manufacturer, a single manufacturer, you're going to have differences between models and how well engineered they are. And that's also true with computers. You can have a brand of computers, and some of them are just going to be engineered better than others, specific models. So that's something to take into account. But you know, I don't know, I've kind of gotten away from, you know, in the past I've been, sometimes I jump on stuff when it's, you know, something new comes out, would come out, so a new category or a new type of device would come out, and I'd be one of the early adopters, and invariably, you know, there's this thing called bleeding edge technology, and, you know, for a good reason. It's because you end up sort of metaphorically cutting yourself and bleeding, you know, to try to get all the, you know, the latest and greatest or the newest. And a number of years ago, I just, for some reason, I got away from that, and I kind of wait. You know, maybe eventually I will adopt it, but after, it has to get smaller and faster and cheaper, and it's got to stay around. If whatever it is hangs around long enough to get smaller and faster and cheaper, then maybe I'll adopt it. But then again, maybe I won't. You know, like this Blu-ray. I was when I was home the other day, I was in a Walmart store, and I happened to notice that there was I don't remember which brand it was, but there was this Blu-ray player for $99 at Walmart. And I really wasn't even tempted. Now, I have, you know, I did say a long time ago that, if, you know, once they get down to $50, I might buy one. Maybe we'll see, but it's gonna have to get down at least that cheap probably before I'll even be enticed to do it. And then I really don't care about buying movies per se. There's only a few movies that are actually worth, in my opinion, that are actually worth owning, to the point where I want to watch them over again, they're worth watching more than once. Now I don't even have a clue if the local Blockbuster, if they're handling Blu-ray or not. Don't know. It's been ages since I've even rented, you know, darkened their door to rent a movie. The place is still open as far as I know. I drive by it. Every time I'm home, I drive by that the Blockbusters. But, and I just don't pay attention. And just haven't thought of it. But usually, I guess, you know, it depends. But I have been kind of busy, you know. Every time I go home, I'm always, especially if my parents are around, that kind of guarantees there's going to be a lot of family dinners and what have you, and that sort of takes up all my time. But, you know, now this winter, maybe, you know, I might get to the point where I'm renting a few movies. I have people recommend movies to me, and sometimes I'll write the names of them down and then, you know, end up kind of forgetting about it. But you know, that might be a nice little thing to do this winter, is to find some of the better movies that have been out for a while that I've just completely missed, and rent them and watch them. But if the Blu-ray players, you know, if they get down to about $50, you know, where they're you know, where it's a decent player for $50, I might do it. Maybe. We'll see. I've got a, let's see, I've got this piece of audio. It's about 11 minutes and 12 seconds that my friend Jeff Forrester, a.k.a. Trucker Two Times, he put this together, and he sent me a copy of it. So let's go ahead and listen to that. This is, as I say, it's about 11 minutes and 12 seconds.
A wise man once said, "You can't look back when you're moving on." Sam Morris, or Sam the Man as he was known, knew this philosophy all too well. He had spent the better part of his life driving an 18-wheeler across the United States, the country he called home. As the first rays of light brought warmth to the cold New England morning, Sam the Man stood tall in his doorway, his right hand clutching a steaming cup of coffee, his left hand tucked into his Levi pocket. He may have been doing this for over 40 years, but rolling out of bed before the sun came up never got easier. At his age now, the bones creaked and the back muscles tightened just a little more as he had shuffled to the waiting shower earlier that morning. The smell of coffee coming from the kitchen every morning let him know that the automatic timer had come through again. That always made him smile, as he was not very well versed in electronics. Mastering his Joe DiMaggio coffee maker made him feel like he was part of the computer age. The sun continued to climb over the landscape, and as the world began to warm up, the aches in Sam's bones began to ease. Sitting in the driveway was Sam's pride and joy, Chloe, his 2000 silver XL Freightliner Classic XL. Chloe was glistening with dew in the morning light, ready for another adventure on the open road. A slight hint of a breeze triggered yet another wave of falling leaves in the yard across the street. This was also a very different morning for Sam. It marked the beginning of the end of the road. He had finally decided over a couple of warm shots of Sour Mash whiskey the night before that it was his time to exit the highway. The highways that had been his home for so many years. His plan was to take a month or so and visit friends and places he had not seen for a while, and probably would not see again. Then he would slowly steer Chloe west to his sister's home in Washington. Dawn's front lawn would be his last truck stop.
This is Trucker Two Times, and I'm very pleased to make known the presence of DispatchMeHome.com, Greg Martin. He's the writer of this Dispatch Me Home audio series here on the website here. This is a great story. It's titled The Story of an American Trucker, and it's about Sam Morris. It's referred to Sam the Man there to his friends. Off his website here, it says Sam had traveled the country from coast to coast, border to border, and then some. But this dispatch is different. This is Sam's last run. After over 40 years on the road, he has decided it's time to give the good dispatches to the younger drivers, and for Sam and Chloe, his trusted 18-wheeler, to dispatch themselves to their last truck stop. Dispatch me home. We'll transport you on a wonderful journey across the United States, capturing the spirit and character of a time gone by with a great American trucker, Sam the Man. This beautifully written story marks the debut of an incredible, talented author, Greg Martin, narrated by one of America's premier voices, Troy Duran. Dispatch Me Home is a fully produced, enhanced audiobook with a wonderful music soundtrack, stunningly lifelike sound effects, and interspersed with beloved trucker songs. Dispatch Me Home will convey you to a better time in America, when friendships meant everything and a firm handshake closed the deal. Come join us for an unforgettable ride and feel the warmth of Dispatch Me Home. Going to be featuring the chapter 14 here. This is a 6-minute audio wire, so sit back and enjoy it, and then I'll be right back.
Sam had not driven Highway 2 in over 20 years. Thinking back, he smiled to himself. That first time he had driven Highway 2 was because of a layover in Duluth, Minnesota. While waiting for his next dispatch, he overheard a driver telling his dispatcher on the phone that he couldn't go west just now. His wife was expecting their firstborn any time. Sam asked the driver if he could possibly help them both out and take the run for him. The driver, George Payne, said, "Sure, if Troy agrees." Sam called out to Troy and asked him if he could take the soon-to-be father's run west with a load of furniture. Troy was more than happy to get the load off the dock. Highway 2 was unique to Sam. He had always told others, "If you want to see America the way America should be seen, drive Highway 2. Don't think you can see America looking down from 30,000 feet or looking out of a fast-moving train with a viewing compartment. If you want to feel, breathe, and taste his America, ground floor and eye to eye, you take Highway 2. It starts simply enough in Upper State Maine, travels west across the Mackinac Bridge in northern Michigan, and 1,600 miles later, after straddling the northern plains, you end up at the Puget Sound, a stone throw away from the Pacific Ocean. The hills, the colors, the people and the mountains. Highway 2 has it all. You've never seen a finer sight in all your life than when you're driving across the wheat field prairies of the northern states. Next to the word awe in the dictionary, there should be a picture of North Dakota as its manicured fields wave in the breeze. Most of the time when driving too, your only company is the train tracks running with you for hundreds of miles. Sometimes you ride on top of them. Other times they rush away from you as if you said something wrong to them. They seem to have a mind of their own, those rails. Then when you least expect it, they rejoin you, keeping you company with a new friend they found somewhere back in the hills. A 100-car freight train. The small towns along the way, such as Devil's Lake, Glasgow, and Havre, and central Montana, are all American and proud of it. The residents work their tails off to raise their families and huddle together in the winter to fight the cold northerlies coming across the Canadian border. Sure, they're busy along Highway 2, but a smile and a wave are not far behind when they see you come around the bend. Ah, this is the way it's supposed to be, Sam thought. John Stewart always summed it up best in his lyrics, "I Remember America."
I remember America. I remember it well. when you could walk downtown on a Saturday night without the smell of fear on your shoulder as you jump at every sound, and you never look in the eye of any stranger who could easily gun you down. Oh, I remember America. I remember every town. When crack was a sound that caps would make, and the only guns that kids would have around. I remember America, and I remember my friends. I remember America, and I want to be safe again. I remember America. I remember the time when rock and roll was cool and fun, and you'd read between the lines. I remember America like you remember the dead. When freedom of speech wasn't every four-letter word a sailor never said. Oh, I remember America, and I remember my school. Now it's graff and gangs and guards and guns and needles in the pool. Oh, I remember America, when kids could walk alone, go to the corner for a root beer float and safely make it home. I remember America, and I remember my friends. I remember America, and I want to be safe again. I remember America. I remember my home, that any working man could proudly say it was something that he owned. Though I remember America, and I remember the day, November 22nd, 1963, when they blew the dreams away. I remember America, and I remember my friends. I remember America, and I want to be safe again. Well, I remember America. I remember America.
Y'all be sure to check that out. Also, Greg is going to be talking with Dave Nemo about Dispatch Me Home on Tuesday, July the 28th at 9 a.m. And, of course, that'll be on the XM 171 and Sirius 147. So be sure to check that out there if you can. But it's really a great opportunity here. I'm very proud there to help get this out and help make it known. So if y'all would, head on over to Dispatch Me Home and check that out there. Sign the guest book and what have you. Check out what you can on there, and give Greg a shout out there, buddy. So, appreciate you listening. For now, this is Trucker Two Times, and I will catch you later.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeff, for putting that together and sending it to me. It sounds very interesting. So that website was dispatchmehome.com, dispatchmehome.com. But as I say, it sounds pretty interesting, and it also sounds very professionally written and produced. So very interesting. I've got a couple of news articles that I thought were kind of interesting. Let's see here. It seems that, there's been a controversy in the... Boy, that thing's just driving me crazy. Let me unplug it. Excuse me. There's been a controversy the past 2 days or 3 days with this black officer. Obama, I guess this... Obama has this professor friend from Cambridge, I think. Yeah, Cambridge, Massachusetts. And so this guy had locked himself out of his own house, this professor. And so he's... I guess it was him and maybe somebody else were you know, pushing in the door or breaking in so they could get back, he could get back in his house. And so in the meantime, one of the neighbors saw two black men. It looked like they were breaking into the house. So she called the police. And so they were inside and the police came and, the police said, well, someone said someone was breaking into this house. We want to see your identification. And so it's kind of unclear whether, I don't know, if the guy Gabe produced his identification right off the bat or if he was, apparently I'd say this guy has a real attitude problem, this professor. And, but in any case, to make a long story short, even after he produced the identification, and there were, and it wasn't just white officers, there was also a black officer there as well, at least one black officer, that agreed that, you know, this guy needed, you know, he needed to be taken in, because he, you know, apparently he was, being disrespectful to the police for, you know, for whatever reason. And so, in the meantime, Obama, kind of got involved, and Obama was basically, he said something to the effect that well, let me just read the article, and this is all going to be kind of self-evident, rather than me try to paraphrase it. Cambridge, Massachusetts, a black police officer who was at Henry Louis Gates Jr.'s home when the black Harvard scholar was arrested, says he fully supports his now white fellow officers, how his white fellow officer handled the situation. Sergeant Leon Lashley says Gates was probably tired and surprised when Sergeant James Crowley demanded identification from him as officers investigated a report of a burglary. Lashley says Gates' reaction to Crowley was a little bit stranger than it should have been. Asked if Gates should have been arrested, Lashley said supported Crowley 100%. Gates has said he was the victim of racial profiling. President Barack Obama says the officers acted stupidly, quote-unquote. Lashley called Obama's remark unfortunate and said he should be allowed to take it back. Then they've got, here's the earlier story below. It says, Cambridge, Massachusetts, a multiracial group of police officers on Friday stood with the white officer who assisted arrested a prominent black Harvard scholar and asked President Barack Obama and Governor Deval Patrick to apologize for comments the union leaders called insulting. Obama said Wednesday that the Cambridge police acted stupidly, quote-unquote, during the disorderly conduct arrest of his friend Henry Louis Gates Jr. in his own home near Harvard University. Governor Deval Patrick said Gates' arrest was every black man's nightmare. Dennis O'Connor, president of Cambridge Police Superior Officer Association, said Obama's remarks were misdirected and the Cambridge police deeply resent the implication that race was a factor in the arrest. President Obama said the actions of the CPD were stupid and linked the event to the history of racial profiling in America. O'Connor said the facts of the case suggested that the president used the right adjective but directed it to the wrong party. Officers responded to Gates' home on July 16 after a woman called 911 and said she saw two black men with backpacks trying to force open the front door. The woman, Lucia Whalen, has not responded to repeated attempts for comment. Gates has said he returned from an overseas trip, found the door jammed, and his driver attempted to force it open. Gates went through the back door and was inside the house on the phone with the property's management company when police arrived. Police said he flew into a verbal rage after Sergeant James Crowley, who is white, asked him to show identification to prove he should be in the home. Police say Gates accused Crowley of racial bias refused to calm down and was arrested. The charge was dropped Tuesday, but Gates has demanded an apology, calling his arrest a case of racial profiling. Gates, 58, maintains he turned over identification when asked to do so by the police. He said Crowley arrested him after the professor followed him back to the porch, repeatedly demanding the sergeant's name and badge number because he was unhappy over his treatment. Crowley has refused to apologize, saying he followed protocol. Then there's this other article. I think Obama's put his foot in his mouth, basically, and it's this is an interesting little incident. Obama seeks to clarify stupidly comment, praises white policeman. President Obama stopped short of an apology to Sergeant James Crowley for saying he, quote-unquote, acted stupidly for arresting black Harvard scholar Henry Louis Gates Jr., but said he should have chosen his words more carefully. President Obama stopped short of an apology to Sergeant James Crowley on Friday for saying he acted stupidly, quote-unquote, for arresting black Harvard scholar Henry Louis Gates Jr., but he said he should have chosen his words more carefully. And at an impromptu appearance at the daily White House briefing, Obama said he spoke with Crowley over the phone and said he wanted to share a beer with Crowley and Gates at the White House. Because this has been ratcheting up and I helped contribute to ratcheting it up, I want to make clear that in my choice of words, I unfortunately gave an impression that I was maligning the Cambridge Police Department or Sergeant Crowley specifically, and I could have calibrated those words differently. My sense is you've got two good people in a circumstance in which neither of them were able to resolve it the way they wanted to resolve it, Obama added. Earlier in the day Friday, the Cambridge and area police unions voiced their support for Crowley and called for an apology from Obama for his statement. His remarks were obviously misdirected, but made it worse by worse yet by suggesting somehow this case should remind us of a history of racial abuse by law enforcement. Dennis O'Connor, president of the Cambridge Police Superiors Officers Association, said at a news conference. O'Connor also referred to statements made by Governor Deval Patrick, the state's first black governor, who called the arrest every black man's nightmare. Whatever may be the history, we deeply resent the implications and reject any suggestion that in this case or any other case that they've allowed a person's race to direct their activities. However, we hope that they will reflect upon their past comments and apologize to the men and women of the Cambridge Police Department, O'Connor said. Obama has said that he was surprised by the controversy sparked by his comments. White House spokesman Robert Gibbs said early Friday that the president regrets that the media have gotten all worked up over the controversy and been distracted from other more substantive issues such as health care. Obama's remarks sparked outrage among many police officers who say the criticism could make it harder for police to work with people of color and set back the progress of race relations that helped Obama become the nation's first black president. Gates was surprised July 16 by Crowley, who was first to respond to the home the renowned black scholar, that's not written right, rents from Harvard after a woman reported seeing two black men trying to force open the front door. Gates said that he had to shove the door open because it was jammed. He was charged with disorderly conduct after police said he yelled at the white officer, accused him of racial bias, and refused to calm down after Crowley demanded Gates show him identification to prove he lived in the home. The charge was dropped Tuesday, but Gates has demanded an apology, calling his arrest a case of racial profiling, Obama was asked about Gates' arrest at the end of the nationally televised news conference on health care Wednesday night and began his response by saying Gates was a friend and he didn't have all the facts. But I think it's fair to say, number one, any of us would be pretty angry, Obama said. Number two, that the Cambridge police acted stupidly in arresting somebody when there was already proof that they were in their own home. And number three, what I think we know, separate and apart from this incident, is that there is a long history in this country of African Americans and Latinos being stopped by law enforcement disproportionately, and that is just a fact. And so in any case, apparently, now see, I deliberately don't listen to news, I don't watch TV news, you know, I get my news online. So I was aware of this story, but so apparently, in the meantime, the cable channels, you know, and Obama ought to be, you know, he ought to know this. It's no secret. The cable channels always find some controversial story to obsess over. You know, for, I don't know, what, last number of days, it was, you know, it's been after Michael Jackson died, it was Michael Jackson 24/7, you know, and then, you know, and now, you know, something like this comes along and then Obama puts his foot in his mouth and they're going to obsess over it. And, you know, so I think, you know, I said, I don't know, a couple of days ago, I was saying, you know, that I think what we're witnessing now, Obama and the Democrats, because it's not just Obama, it's the Democrats too in Congress, they've pushed too far, they've tried to reach, you know, they've tried to, they've way overreached, you know, with this health care, and then they want to, you know, the tax cap and trade, you know, with the carbon credits, which would just, either one of those would absolutely wreck the economy. And I think people are slowly waking up to the fact that, you know, we have it, the bats are in the belfry, we have idiots, we have an idiotic dictatorship of Democrats, we got a liberal dictator, radical liberal dictatorship. And so people are slowly waking up to the fact of what it is. It's taken a while, but, you know, I saw it early on before, you know, I just saw it coming. But people are finally waking up to the fact. And the thing, you know, now my mom has kind of, is a great example. My mom is, you know, she's liberal Democrat, and she has been for years, and so it, she, you know, for the longest time, she liked Bill Clinton, you know, and she just, you know, and she, I don't know, you know, and she kind of defended him for a long, long time, and then, you know, of course, she finally kind of got mad at him, you know, with the Monica Lewinsky thing, you know, that finally kind of turned her against him a little bit. But with Obama, you know, she's been kind of you know, even though she didn't even vote this last time, she's kind of defended Obama and so on and so forth. And but now, I noticed a change in her. This last time I was home, you know, she's stopped defending him, and she's just not happy with him, and you know, so. And I've tried to explain to her, you know, because, you know, at one time I was more, you know, kind of more supportive of the Republicans. But at this point, you know, I'm not. You know, I think that in this next election in 2010, we should just, you know, regardless whether they're Democrats or Republicans, if they're incumbents, they need tossed out on their ears. We need to just, wipe out as many incumbents as we possibly can. You know, I need to find a list locally. You know, whenever the 2010 election comes along, I need to make a point of finding a list of people that are, you know, all the incumbents, and then make sure that I vote against every incumbent that there is, regardless of what party. Vote against them. And, you know, we just need to wipe out the entire thing and start, you know, as many as possible, and, you know, clean the slate and start over. Because, you know, quite frankly, both parties, you know, you got, you know, like Tweedledee and Tweedledum. And, you know, the Republicans are still acting like Democrat light. You know, and the Democrats are sort of acting like communists. The communists are in charge right now. We've got a communist dictatorship that we elected. You know, whether you like it or not, that's the reality. And people are beginning to see that, and it's incidents like this, you know, where, you know, Obama really stuck his foot in his mouth with this. You know, and now he's wondering why, you know, what hit him. But he really stuck his foot in his mouth. And it's, you know, stupid little incident like this can really go a long way towards causing people that would normally be supportive of Obama, somebody like Obama, and the and the Democrats in Congress, but in this case it's Obama. This can go a long way towards sort of acting as a catalyst to speed up the process of him losing his credibility, sort of losing the benefit of the doubt, losing his power. And that's what needs to happen. We need, you know, the Congress, of course, is the one that, you know, they're passing all the laws, and then of course Obama has you know, made all these stupid presidential decrees. You know, they have all these so-called executive orders. You know, and the federal government, all, you know, the between the president and the Congress, and then all these bureaucrats, these federal agencies, they're trying to take over everything. And now they've taken over the car industry, they've taken over the finance, the banking industry. And now they want to take over the healthcare industry, and as well as the energy industry. You know, it's outrageous what's happening. So people are waking up, and I think that you know, so there is kind of reason for optimism. You know, in the short term, the economy's kind of gone to pot, and it's getting worse. Indications are it's kind of getting worse, but it's going to get worse before it gets better. But on the other hand, there is reason for optimism, because people are, sometimes it takes pain in order to get people to wake up and sort of face reality. And at the end of this process, if enough people end up kind of facing reality, that's a very positive thing, because then, you know, once you face reality, then you can really begin to take positive steps. And that's certainly true in, you know, individually, in our lives individually, and it's true in our lives collectively as a nation. It's important that we face reality, and of course we've got a whole country you know, full of a lot, you know, a bunch of people that are, you know, we've got all of these distractions, 24/7 distractions machines, basically, you know. There's nothing wrong with entertainment per se, but if you abuse it, and you use your entertainment as a means of not facing reality, then it's a dangerous thing. And it can have a bad effect. So, but we've got plenty of people that are distracted. A lot of little distractions. People abusing all kinds of things, you know, to distract themselves so they don't have to face reality. But when you find yourself in pain, whether it could be physical pain, or it can be just psychological pain or financial pain, or, you know, a combination of things like that, that can cause people to begin to wake up, you know, and begin to face the music. And that's actually a very positive sign, you know. And so I'm beginning to become optimistic that all of this is going to get turned around. And, you know, the main thing is that people begin to wake up. You know, we like to blame the leaders, and, you know, people point their finger at the president and the Congress. But ultimately, they reflect the people. And the fact of the matter is, we've had too big of a percentage of the population that has been sort of off in the dream world somewhere, not really facing reality. And, you know, too many people are brainwashed. Too many people are suggestible. And it's time that a lot of those people woke up. And I think that's slowly starting to happen. So I'm becoming more optimistic at this point that the whole thing will get kind of turned around. But in the meantime, it's interesting to watch. It's because Obama is in the process of really, you know, turning into a Jimmy Carter. But he's going to be a Jimmy Carter on steroids. And the Congress, you know, that's going to be fun to watch too, because there's, you know, Pelosi, these people are so arrogant. Pelosi and Reid and Chris Dodd and, you know, I think a lot of these people are probably, you know, the ones that are up for election in 2010 I hope that they're out on their ear. That they'll get kicked out. And I think some of the Democrats in Congress are really beginning to feel the heat from their constituents, and they're really beginning to think, we're going to get kicked out, we better not do this, we better not do all these things. But I don't know, it's interesting to watch, if nothing else. Let's see. Oh, there was this other article here real quick. Diller calls free web content a quote-unquote myth. This is from July the 24th, Bloomberg. Barry Diller, chairman and chief executive officer of IAC Interactive Corp., said web users will have to pay for what they watch and use, joining the refrain of media moguls who say that an era of free internet content is ending. The media and technology executive whose company runs the Ask.com search engine, is that still around? I guess it must be. and Match.com dating service said it's a mythology to view the internet as a system of free communications. It is not free, and it is not going to be, Diller said today at the Fortune Brainstorm Conference in Pasadena, California. In addition to IAC, he is chairman of Expedia Incorporated, the online travel service, and Ticketmaster Entertainment Incorporated. Diller, 67, joined a group of media chiefs from Liberty Media Corp's John Malone to Walt Disney Company's CEO Robert Iger, who are challenging the accepted model that consumers pay for internet access and then the content is free. Diller predicted there will be three revenue streams: advertising, subscriptions, and transactions. Disney, the world's biggest media company, is developing a subscription-based product for the internet, Iger said on July 22nd at the conference. The Burbank, California-based company has opportunities to increase sales from the web, Iger said. Online advertising can be improved, and marketers can target consumers by tracking their activities and interests. Subscriptions products are particularly promising to the company. Willing to pay. We have ample evidence, both in traditional and new media, that people are willing to pay for quality, to pay for choice, and to pay for convenience, Iger said. And they are willing to pay for what they perceive as value. Companies from Disney to New York Times Company are seeking ways to get more revenue from the internet and counter the loss of traditional media subscribers and advertisers. New York Times said in a survey of print subscribers this month that it's considering a $5 monthly fee for access to its namesake newspaper website. The company also asked whether existing print subscribers would be willing to pay a discounted fee of $2.50 a month for access to the site, NewYorkTimes.com. The most visited among newspaper sites is currently free. Yesterday, the newspaper's publisher reported second quarter profit almost doubled as the company cut jobs and wages to cope with a deepening advertising slump. Revenue declined 21%. News Corp, publisher of the Wall Street Journal and owner of the Fox TV and Film Studios, plans to increase revenue at its internet business by charging customers for news and entertainment, Jonathan Miller, the company's chief digital officer, said yesterday at the conference. Going forward, some companies will have material people are willing to pay for and others won't, said Miller, chief executive officer of News Corp's Digital Media Group. Journalism will increasingly become a paid model online, said Miller. The Wall Street Journal already charges for online subscriptions. In the quarter ending March 31st, News Corp's interactive revenue declined 11% to $187 million, led by a 16% decline in advertising its sites, including MySpace. IAC, based in New York, fell 12 cents to $17.91 at 4 p.m. New York time in NASDAQ stock market trading. It has gained 14% this year. News Corp Class A rose 2 cents to $9.89. New York Times rose 16 cents to $6.66, while Disney fell 22 cents to $26.58, both on the New York Stock Exchange. So, I don't know. They've tried that before, where they try to charge a subscription to get to the site. Now, the problem is, if they've really got content that's worthwhile, then people might subscribe. But if they don't, then people aren't. Now, I'm not going to pay for, if let's say the New York Times charges for if you want to read their articles, well, I'm not going to pay for it. I could care less. There's going to be plenty of other places where you can get stories. They can't that, you know, not really monopolize, but they can't try to say that a news event is exclusive, because it's not. The news is the news. A specific story could be, you know, if they've got a specific, some sort of a specific story about something that someone wrote, then that, you know, I get, you know, that's one thing. If some other site tries to grab, you know, copy and paste a story, then that's, you know, that's kind of plagiarism. But if it's just a news, I mean, the news is the news is the news. And, you know, so they can't monopolize. They can't make that exclusive. If it's a news event, they can't make it. It's not exclusive to them. And there's no way they're going to ever stop, you know, because there's going to be plenty of other sites that are reporting on it. So, you know, I don't see how they can charge for it. Now, and I think they've tried in the past to do, you know, and there have been other newspapers that have tried that, and it was a miserable failure. But on the other hand, if they can come up with content, you know, like if Disney, for example, can come up with exclusive content, you know, maybe, you know, have come up with some sort of a, like a cartoon thing for kids to watch, you know, parents might be willing to pay for that. I could see where that might be. You'd get some parents, but you know, I think they're barking up the wrong tree if they think that they're going to be able to charge for content online the same price that they could charge for their newspaper. You know, back when people were willing to buy newspapers, because that's the other thing that that has changed. People just aren't willing to do that. People, you know, people don't have time, and they're not willing to do it. And you know, so people are willing to pay for some things, and they're not willing to pay for others. It just depends on the perceived value, and quite frankly, the perceived value of newspaper stories over the years has gone down and down and down. And you know, and then you got these, the other thing, you got 24-hour cable channels now. You know, Fox, you know, they got like the Fox News Channel, they've got a website. Are they going to try to charge for that? You know, is CNN going to try to charge for their website? I don't think so. They want you to, you know, if they want you to see their website, if they want to promote their website, which they do, they can't charge for it. And are they going to charge you for it and then make you see, watch ads too? You know, so, you know, it's a changing world, and they're going to have to change with the times. And you know, if you can create value online, if you can create value, then you have the opportunity to make money. It's as simple as that. But it's not going to be as easy as it once was when back in the day, when before the internet, you had, you know, you if you had your $1 million printing press and your $1 million studio and your $1 million transmitters, you had a sort of a monopoly. In this day and age, with the internet and with all this marvelous communication that we have, you know, you've got, it's a totally different world than it once was. Anyhow, probably better be cutting this off. Hope everyone has a great weekend. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.